and welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And I'm Mark.
And I'm Ben.
I'm Karen.
Hi, and I'm Paul.
And today we're going to be talking about the paradox of freedom in lockdown.
We'll also talk about launching a brand in lockdown.
Yeah, and we'll spend some time talking about how we've adapted a business and what I've learned from speaking to other leaders.
So we're all back in the office. It's our first day in the office today. How are we feeling about travelling and stuff like that? Karen, you've always been a bit worried about travelling. How was travelling in today?
Yeah, not as bad as I thought. That's been my main kind of deterrent from making my way into central London, actually, is just having to get on numerous trains and tubes, etc., which, I don't know, just felt a bit weird about. But actually, it was fine. It was quiet, came in a bit later. It does feel strange to be back. It is a bit of a ghost town around here. But quite nice as well. Nice to see everyone.
So Paul and I have been kind of soldiering on during lockdown with the podcast over Zoom, but now we're actually sitting facing each other. One of the questions we've been asking people all the time is, what have you learned personally and professionally? Why don't we can turn the tables, Paul. I can ask you.
I know.
What have
wow,
you learned personally and professionally?
I've been asking questions only for 6 months, so I need to remind myself what it's like to answer them. I'll just say as well to start with, great to be back together. Hopefully the audio quality is higher now that we're actually back on the proper mics and not Zoom. It's been an interesting few months, definitely, I'm sure, for many. But yeah, what have I learned and what have I taken from it? I guess there's a couple of things, really, personally and professionally. But from a personal sense, I think, my wife is pregnant, which has been...
Woohoo!
Thank you.
So who do I say well done to? You or Amy, or both of you?
I think we were both involved, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Very collaborative.
It was a team effort, let's put it that way. So yeah, that's been great. I mean, like, if it wasn't for lockdown, we would have been spending so much more time apart. So to be there, certainly when she had a rough time to start with, I was there all the time, which is great. And then obviously you go through the journey of pregnancy and there's loads of things happen all the time. So to be there throughout all of that has been fantastic. So that's a huge plus. I think more professionally, this word's been used a lot, but balance. You know, I think we've been running the business for years now, but I spent a lot of time thinking, this is our business, we should run it how we want. But still, I think I was wrestling with, we were still conforming to certain ways that we'd kind of grown up with, and mainly that was sort of sat in an office 9 to 5. So having lockdown forcing us to be at home, forcing us to be more flexible, I feel relieved, I think is one word, that I've now got the confidence to say, no, this is how I feel and agree we should be running the business. And it's been great. We've all done brilliantly, I think, remotely. We've obviously missed each other, but I think a huge part is now we're running the business exactly how we want it to be.
Ben, what have you learned in lockdown that you're going to take forward and not stop doing? Because that's the theme, isn't it, of this, that it should have been a mindful experience for us all, I hope.
The main thing that I've sort of really learned is the importance of having freedom, and freedom of space, and freedom of a bit more time, and not being restricted. And I've always hated commuting, so not taking that out has been huge. Obviously, like, you know, still having quite a lot of work to do and sort of still being very busy and making it work within the sort of the new reality of doing it from home was interesting at first, but I've kind of really got into it. And I think the way I see it is, like, we've probably been sort of, just because of the way in which our industry works, we've always been working in a sort of quite structured environment, both from a time perspective and from a physical perspective. And actually what's been really exciting is that those two things now are definitely sort of much more malleable. And that's really helped with me, because sometimes when you're under the pressure of having to deliver something really quickly, for some creatives, it doesn't work like that. You have to have a bit more of a bit more freedom and a bit more sort of, you need to be a bit more relaxed. And that's definitely helped. And being able to go and do things or sort of move around in a way that I wouldn't be able to normally do, whether it be running, walking, or doing other things, and not having to sort of worry about sort of, you know, being in a sort of really strict environment, has actually made it much better. And I think when we bring more creatives into the business, and you know, when we're hiring, allowing people to sort of be comfortable and confident with their own method of creativity is really important, because I've definitely found mine And I kind of, we need to be open to how other people then want to sort of work. Yeah, I think that's been really sort of quite exciting, and it hasn't changed or sort of like diluted quality. You still can come up with really amazing ideas. It just means that you do it on your own terms, within reason, obviously. You know, it's not about sort of, you know, you can't take the piss. You've still got to get the work done. You still have to be accountable. But having that freedom has been a revelation.
I think I felt a bit of that myself as well. In some days I thought I was being lazy, but in actual fact, I think all I was doing was just taking my time
to get
stuff done.
Yeah.
I got it done. It might have been at 8 o'clock at night.
Totally.
But I was doing stuff in the day. So we've caught up earlier, dear listener, and I explained that I spent nearly every day at least an hour outside, which I haven't done ever.
Well, that's interesting, because we live in a world where work is, the structure of work is uniform, and actually now we're realizing that actually we can adapt it and change it to make it work for us and be a bit more natural. How do we think, and how do we work naturally? And that freedom, again, it depends on how busy and how structured, but as business owners and as a small business, we're able to really embrace that, and that is, I think, incredibly fortunate.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that. Karen, you've got some big news in lockdown, haven't you? Are you going to share that with us?
No choice now.
It's been announced. Yes, I'm going to bring the second baby to the Wax On Creche.
Wow, yeah.
For the avoidance of doubt, Karen isn't my wife. This is a separate baby.
We keep it nice and nice and close to the Wax On family. Yeah.
Different baby.
Yes, just to be clear, I am having my own separate baby.
I'm glad we've got that clear, because I tell you what, I was confused.
And it's just, in some ways it's a shame it's audio, because Karen is really showing as well.
Yeah, I've got
and
a bump.
You've got a bump, which is fabulous.
Yeah,
I'm so
fun.
Excited for you.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. And I have to say, it has been quite a treat being at home for my first trimester. I'm out of my first trimester now, but I don't know how people have normal lives when they are pregnant. I really, really don't, because I felt so ill. And I was saying to you guys, for me, mostly it'll be about waking up in the morning and thinking, right, how am I going to get through the day just being at home? Never mind having to negotiate commuting and working in an office. So in many ways, I have been very lucky. I don't know if you've found this as well, Paul, the medical journey has been a little bit strange because of COVID, but in general, it has actually, being in lockdown whilst early pregnancy has been actually a real blessing.
Actually, later on, I want to pick up on things that we think maybe have got better out in the kind of customer experience world. I've just thought of one, actually, which is medicine. But let's come back to that. Sorry, Paul, were you going to mention?
No, just saying, just to echo Karen's point, like I have a new respect for the women that have had to go into work or go on and commute and sort of suffer in silence, really, because of this kind of societal kind of position that you shouldn't really mention anything until you get to a certain point, which, of course, has medical reasons. But my hat's off to those guys that would have had to suffer in silence, really. But now the kind of the new flexible working environment allows women, as Karen is touching on, to be where they need to be, really, when things are a bit tough. And also for us as well, like to help shape kind of what paternity and maternity looks like in the current climate, which I'm excited for us to shape that for the best of the people.
So work continued, obviously, whilst we were all in lockdown. And, you know, our audience are predominantly marketers or work in marketing. And one of the things that Ben and Karen, you were most closely involved with, was actually launching a brand new business, a new brand in lockdown, which, you know, if the comparison is close to recession, you taught not to do that. But we did. How did it go? Who wants to start? Karen, what's your reflections on launching a brand in lockdown?
Yeah, well, it feels like yonks ago now, doesn't it? Even though it really wasn't. But time has got a different feeling at the moment. But we helped a brand, an online shopping service called Bother, who are new to market. We helped them launch earlier this year. And it was a really exciting challenge. And I think we learnt quite a lot. I guess it was a bit different in the sense that they were actually very well set up for the time, and that it's online goods, your household essentials, which obviously were in high demand and short supply, and people didn't really want to go to the shop. So it was, in many ways, was a perfect moment for them to launch, but it wasn't their plan to launch at that time. So it really was a case of taking advantage. Well, that's a mercenary way of putting it. It was a way of putting ourselves in the right moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, like, yeah, they were launching roughly around the same time, but they had to change all their messaging to try and to adapt to what was going on. And they were very self-aware and conscious, and we helped them do that, which was not to be disaster capitalists and to sort of like to leverage it in a way that would feel like, you know, uncomfortable and disingenuous. And so they did a really good job of it. I think the most interesting thing was it is like, there was no one going, right, I know what we need to do. Yeah. Everyone needed to work together. It was a completely sort of flat, right, this is completely unique. This is a really sort of awful situation. No one has the right answer on their own. We're going to have to work it out together. And that came from the founder of the business all the way down to sort of everyone who was working on it. So it was kind of it was super collaborative, and it was really, it was kind of just quite real and genuine. It was the relationship you built with the client was not one of sort of like, it wasn't, I would say, sort of what you would normally have with a client. It wasn't transactional. It was much more like, right, how can we do this together? How can we make this work?
Yeah, we're all in it together.
Yeah.
And something that I really liked about it, which I think COVID meant that it was done in a different way than it normally would, is that marketing is often quite a siloed discipline for a business. But what we got to see, and we've talked about this before, is we were working right with the people who manage the supply chain. We were working with the people who manage packaging, who manage procurement. We're working directly with the founder. And that was amazing because it meant that we learned a lot about the logistics behind what we are talking about. Mm-hmm. And it also meant that we had an opportunity to have an influence on what they were doing as well. And we always talk about that chain needs to work much more closely together. And I think the fact that we were all working remotely, we were all doing something completely unexpected and working in the strangest situation, meant that everyone worked much closer together. And I think it was a much more effective process as a result.
And did you have any chats about let's wait?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. We talked about it a lot. We said, like, you've got to be really careful. You can't go in and talk about NHS workers or sort of isolated elderly people in a way that is going to sort of feel uncomfortable. You have to do it genuinely. And they were super cautious and careful about sort of how loud they spoke and how sort of earnest they were about the messaging. And it was about being as helpful as possible rather than being right, we're a new business, use us. It's a commercial, obviously, as a commercial business, but it was extremely sort of cautious about how it portrayed that. The thing is, what was so interesting about it and what we've realized over the last few months is that everything changes so quickly.
Yeah.
So they're sort of like, the way in which you approach things and the attitude towards certain things was changing every week. So they had to adapt and not do anything that was going to sort of potentially sort of cause them issues in the future, which was impossible to predict. But it was kind of like everyone was so aware of that and how sort of changeable things were that it made our conversations and the work that we were doing way more considered, way more careful, and way more collaborative.
And going back to the point about creativity, how difficult do you think it was to be true to the brand when external factors were really affecting the way that you spoke?
Really difficult, because we'd already established a tone of voice and a visual style prior to lockdown. We'd done a shoot, everything, all of that went out the window, because it was a specific, the whole brand was built on a specific way of talking. So actually the initial creative that went out was quite straight. Wasn't about, like, you know, the tone of voice. It wasn't about making the brand come through. It was just about being helpful and trying to help within that environment without it sort of feeling sort of, you know, fake or sort of, you know, disingenuous. So I suppose that was challenging, because we worked so hard on building what a brand would sound like when it were launched, and then for it to suddenly just stop and have to be delayed. But now it's there, now it's fine. It was actually incredible how quickly people then wanted or were sort of like absolutely comfortable with humor again. People needed that. People didn't want it to be so serious and earnest. We've only got a limit to how much we can handle that kind of, that amount of comms around that kind of sort of that tone. So for it to sort of for it to get back into where it was actually a lot faster than we originally thought.
So I'm getting the impression that it was that A word. Agility was really important.
Yeah,
you know, you were talking to each other, you were changing things, which is important in any kind of retail environment. Karen, if we were to launch a brand again, what have you learned that you will definitely do again from the launch of Bother?
I think all the things you've just said, actually, and in many ways, because I think there were quite a unique set of circumstances in terms of the business side of things, but in terms of how we work together as a team, I think that should definitely be a model for going forward. We had kind of daily status calls. We were all hyper aware of what our competitors were doing. We were hyper aware of what the market looked like, and that stood us in really good stead to be making really good decisions about what we did day by day. And also not just the actual do we launch now, but once we had launched, how we could keep adapting to make sure that we stayed relevant and that we were doing the best that we could do in very strange circumstances.
It's kind of weird, you don't often get it. Was I use the word purity sort of loosely, but it was because no one had any agenda, and there was something very unique about that particular time where everyone was trying to work. No one was trying to push in a different direction, because it was like, right, this is what's going on. We all need to pull in the right way together. And it kind of had this kind of, this unique purity to how we collaborated, which I don't think is very hard to recreate in moving forward. But it was quite special at that time.
When we were first chatting, Paul, you mentioned that you've learned stuff personally about... You've gained confidence, I think, is what you said as a result of
Definitely,
it.
Definitely, yeah.
Talk us through what steps we took as a business, because I think it's interesting for anybody to review what we've had to do, in terms of Rishi's loans and stuff like that, that I think we took advantage of. But I'm also interested, if you can think back to the other people we've spoken to on the podcast over the past 6 months, it's crazy, isn't it? Six months. And what you've learned from them, what they've been doing as well. But let's start with us. What did we do?
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, as you said, running a business is educational daily, but this, especially over the last few months, has been a huge, huge education. And yeah, to your point, it's given me a lot of confidence through loads of different areas. Anyone that's sat on a webinar over the last 6 months has seen kind of, what are you doing about COVID, you know, and it probably broadly fits into four buckets, which is kind of commercial and finance, people and HR, what you're doing with your clients, and then what you're doing about your sales pipeline. Broadly fit into that category, and that's largely been what kind of we focused on. As a underpinning it is acting fast. I would say that's the main thing. I think if a decision you're making can be changed or is reversible, the biggest risk is moving too slow on things. And I think that's what I've seen, that people probably not act fast. I mean, typically we would probably review things that are evolving in a quarterly basis and then make a change. But actually we've had to do that on a weekly basis. So we probably had a 2 week period at the start of lockdown where I was like, okay, let's just plan for the worst. Let's just batten down the hatches. What do we need to look at? And then actually as we evolved out of that, we've kind of grown and seen what our clients are doing, seen what the sales pipeline looked at. But yeah, to be specific, the stuff that we've done, we've been fortunate in many areas, like being of a certain size. We haven't had a dozen people working on EasyJet, for example, where the bigger agencies would have struggled. We have taken advantage of some of the government schemes, loan schemes. We have used furlough along the way, which has been very helpful. And things that have been beneficial for us in the early part of lockdown, some of our clients, existing clients, so whilst no new business was happening or existing clients were spending, but I think the second half of lockdown we started to see new business pick up. But yeah, speed has been the main most important thing for us. Acting fast, having the confidence to do it, being of a size where we think we can make the changes. But yeah, and I think we've protected certain areas. I think we obviously made some cutbacks to start with, but we were very confident about protecting certain areas, and that was around sort of sales and PR. You know, we knew we could kind of probably get by with certain changes, but we protected that area, and I think that will start to bear fruit. You know, keeping conversations going, being there for clients, making sure that we can play a positive role, even though it might not be doing any work for them. We can play a positive role in our clients and prospects' lives. So that's been really useful. And I'm proud of all of us, really. It's been kind of quite strange and a bit abnormal at times, but we've survived. And I'm grateful that we were of a size that has been able to weather it.
And I don't think we should forget some of the details, because I've heard others talk about communications and how important they were. We had a Zoom every day, didn't we, at 10 o'clock. Some days I wasn't dressed for it, you could tell. Yeah. Some days I was still having my breakfast.
That's true.
I showed up in my vest a couple of times.
I was going to say, I've never seen you in a vest before.
And that's recently as well.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, yeah, it's fair. I probably could speak for an hour about the kind of the minutiae of the things we've put in place. And but yeah, for example, yeah, trying to everything we can to keep our connectivity, our spirits up, making sure on top of things. And yeah, back to my point at the start of this, like we've proved that like remote working has huge power, but back to my other point, has to be in balance. You know, we're a service-based industry, where a lot of what we do is built on relationships, so we have to get back to that balance as soon as we can.
Yeah, it's not going to be something that will go away, the whole thing about where we work. My mate Tom, if you're listening, Tom, I hope you don't mind me saying this, I thought you had a great idea. He's talking about reducing the size of his main office and creating satellites by looking at where his employees actually live, and then right, okay, so there's a cluster there, we're going to have a WeWork just there, there's a cluster here, we're going to have a WeWork here, and then the idea is that everybody will come into the office maybe 2 days a week, and then you can go to your nearest WeWork on the other days. Yep. I think that's a great idea, and he knows it will cut his costs significantly, but also it gives his people a really different way of working.
That's probably one for another podcast, but the debate around overheads, the extension of the pool of talent that will now go beyond cities as remote working comes in, but yeah, that's probably for another time. But yeah, I mean, talking about others as well, and I think that's one of the most positive things that has come from this, and talking about webinars, and we've probably all got webinar fatigue, but everyone was trying to help everyone. You know, a lot of the early webinars were like, this is what I'm doing, you know, completely opening their doors. The kind of the dog eat dog kind of not going to help my competitors is completely gone, I think, and it's people like, this is what I'm doing, hopefully that helps you, and likewise. And as I said, I chair a community of fellow startups, and that's been a really important part of saying kind of, this is what I'm doing, that might be a help, can we pool resources, can we do stuff to help each other. So that positivity around the industry, I think, is a huge shift forward, and hopefully that can stay, you know, because we need to help each other out. But yeah, I mean, as you said, Mark, we've had lots of fascinating guests as we've sort of shifted the podcast towards more interview styles over the last few months. We've been very fortunate and grateful to have some great guests, and yeah, it was tricky to pull out a few themes, but there's probably a couple that I would say. From the leaders, I think it's the word comes back to trust. You know, the trusting their employees to work from home is easy for us at a small size, but to trust 38,000 people or however many you've got as an employee.
Yeah, a green king, that was the number, wasn't it? Yeah. That's a bit mind-boggling.
To trust everyone, I think it's forced people that maybe have kind of grown up in a world of presenteeism to say, actually, no, this can work. A bit of an obvious statement there, but still very important. I think I would describe it as strategically taking a breath. I think a lot of people have talked about, you know, where it's so focused on the day-to-day, so focused on ROI, actually, okay, they've had a bit of a breathing space, maybe had a lot of staff or furloughs, so they haven't had to worry about kind of personnel management, and they've had the time to say, okay, we wanted to do this over the next few years, why don't we do it over the next few months, which leads into another point, which is around acceleration. Things that might have been a project, again, back to the Green King reference, Nick McKenzie, their CEO, was like, we had about 38 projects or whatever that we were just like, okay, let's just get going, you know, assigning teams, bringing people back off furlough to run these special projects. So there's been an acceleration. I know the phrase acceleration of inevitable has been used quite a lot, but also there's been acceleration of stuff that maybe wasn't kind of, they found the time and had more time to do that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, apart from the obvious things around ways of working, internal comms, I think it's been great. And I think likes of us at agency and service clients, so it's been good for us to sort of have those conversations about, hey, we always want to be kind of at the table talking about the strategy and their business problems. It's been great for us to have those conversations versus, here's a brief, can you just get on with that executionally? We've had a real shift of I guess being higher up the food chain, not a great phrase, but that's the reality, and helping with business problems, not just kind of creative problems.
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. I think although there's been lots of challenges to how we work with our clients during lockdown and at a time which is difficult economically for any business, it's also been a great time to be an agency partner and a great time to build client agency relationships. Part of that, I think, is to your point around having more strategic and longer term conversations, which you don't always get invited to, and it's been great to be part of those conversations, and you build much stronger relationships with your clients as a result. You can also do better work with them because you've got a better idea of what they're working with and what they need to do. I think it's also been, from a more personal perspective, everyone's just, this is going to sound weird, but everyone's just being a bit more human. Like, you can see people's kids and dogs and stuff in the background, and you're in people's homes, and everyone was in, especially for the first few weeks, no one knew which way was up or down. And I feel like I've been able to actually become closer to many of our clients as a result, because we've just got a much more human relationship, which has spilled over into our professional relationship.
I think that's really interesting.
Professionalism, that's it, isn't it? Like, that's been completely challenged.
Yeah.
Sort of the old construct and sort of expectations around professionalism is completely gone, really, because it's now we can't afford to have those. Well, they just don't fit with the way in which people interact. But it's interesting, you say, like, brands now, you know, and agencies, the relationship has been fraught for a long period of time, and actually this is an amazing opportunity to re-establish the value that a third party can help a brand.
Yeah.
Brands don't know what, no one knows how to get out of this. No one's been here before. And actually, as an industry, we need to get better at going, okay, so how can we help across all the different things, rather than going, well, the only way you're going to grow is by making a TV ad.
Yeah.
which if anyone's doing that, I think, you know, then that won't work. Like, I think it's more just, we've got to be more consultative and more sort of supportive for all the different things that for all the different things that a client might need. It's been that could potentially be a really sort of interesting reset for our industry.
Relationship change. Yeah. I want to go back to creativity, but go on.
I was just going to say, I think it also comes back to how a relationship starts. You know, we've had a few Zoom pitches, which I'm very grateful to say have been successful, but that kind of, as Karen was saying, you're just seeing people in their homes and their real lives, and they're meeting their dogs and their kids, and you're starting a relationship in a different way than we ever were before. You're not kind of intermediary coming in a room, very formal, here's the brief answer. Not to say that won't still play a role, but I think we're starting relationships in a different way, which we're seeing is actually making the future relationship a more positive one,
a bit more authentic by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Going back to creativity, I'm conflicted. Karen and Ben, I want you to help me with this, because you've been more closely involved with the creative process whilst we've been in lockdown. So you remember I said that I was starting to do shopping online a lot, and particularly fashion. And I noticed that all of the shoots had changed to being model own. You know, you could literally tell that model was in his bathroom taking a shot on his iPhone of that piece of stuff for ASOS. So it was safe, it was clearly cheap, and yet doing a professional shoot in lockdown has become so complicated and so expensive. That's where I'm conflicted. Tell me about the shoots that you've been on during lockdown. Is all of that stuff really necessary? Everybody wearing visors and... But you know where I'm going with this.
I think it's down to the brand and to the actual product and how it works, because obviously with fashion it's slightly different. I mean, there was that example you just spoke about for sort of like for fast fashion like ASOS, but then Vogue had done something similar with Robert Pattinson, who was on the front cover doing his own photo shoot during lockdown, and it's quite cool and interesting. Actually, it's one of my favorite things that I saw creatively. But there are still a hell of a lot of different brands and products that need original sort of creative sort of production to help promote them. And it does require, you know, they don't lend themselves naturally to that kind of autonomy. You still need to have, you know, quite a lot of control and a lot of sort of, you know, sort of craft around certain things to make it look and sound good. I've been on two shoots. One was incredibly, was right in the middle of lockdown, and had sort of like minimal people. There was social distancing, there was temperature guns, there was like, you know, everyone had to bring their own coffee cup. Luckily it was a very simple shoot, so it was fine. So complicated shoots, when it's, you know, when the idea is good, but it kind of is all going to be down to the execution, that does still require quite a lot of people involved, I would say.
And it's getting more expensive, isn't it?
I think
we're paying for it.
Yeah, but I mean, it depends what it is. I mean, there are different ways of doing it. Like, I think we, like, you know, what you want is reliability. That, I think that's the thing that's sort of like, you want something that you can trust to deliver good quality stuff. So the opportunity to sort of experiment in those environments, in those particular types of shoots, is pretty tough.
I'm just worried that, you know, I can imagine as a CMO looking at the cost of shoots going up to make them COVID safe and kind of go, well, I'm not going to do it then. I'll use existing stuff or I'll use stock.
Yeah.
So how do we get around that? Because that's going to happen.
Are the costs up that high?
Yeah, I think it's more... I think it's like a cost that just sort of like really does jut out because of what's going on at the moment. But the danger of that is that the innovation around existing footage, animation, less animation major because you can be completely original with that, but existing footage, zoom footage, you could see like brands would that those innovations were being tired out within 2 or 3 weeks, and then everyone looks the same. So the whole point is about differentiation, which we always talk about, but so you still need to be creating original things to look different. Mm. And the problem with what's gone on at the moment, people have made do with what they've had to be present and to be on air, that's fine. And to be sort of like to make sure that you don't lose that level of awareness. However, now everything, you can't afford to look the same as everyone else. And for a long period of time, we've had a lot of samey, boring creative. Like, there's been lots of amazing, this is what we talked about earlier, but like the chance to blend this new way of working, this kind of creative freedom that people have with the freedom of normal production was going to be quite exciting, because that's all happening in the bubble of like, well, we still can't make anything that interesting because of what's been going on, and so therefore the actual output is pretty bland. It has been, really. There's been a couple of really good examples of sort of people making the most of it, but very, very little has been genuinely great. Because, and that's no one's fault, that's just the nature of the world we've been living in. Now, if there's freedom to create things in an original way again, and there's no restriction, there's not as much restrictions, we need to start getting into that quickly.
Do you know what? I'm going to pick on one example, because I do think things are restrictive, and I want to hear from you, Karen, in terms of what you've learned. But for one shoot that we did, that I was involved in on the sidelines, we suggested having an animal. And do you remember, we all went into meltdown because the combination of COVID and an animal in a shoot was like, Karen, you were going, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
This is not going to happen. We are not going to get a dog into a shoot. And we did.
We did.
And it
yeah.
was one of the best shots in the shoot, I think, as well.
It does. Yeah. I mean, it helped that it was my dog. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, were the handler.
I was the handler and the agent and everything that went on around it. So
one of the best call sheets I've ever seen in my whole life is the one that had Ben's dog on it.
Yeah. And it's the most, like, ludicrous picture of her as well. And it just said, Agent Ben Hooper. And it was very, very funny. We laughed a lot.
But like everything, I think it's just being a creative about how you approach the practicalities of it. And I mean, one thing I will say is our shoots have maybe been a little bit simpler in that they've been still shoots, so moving image, and we haven't tackled yet, and that will probably
That's
bring
coming
its
up
own
next,
challenges
though, isn't it? Yes.
Exactly. in terms of how you shoot socially distanced and so on. But in general, I actually, because I was really worried about it, and we worked with some fantastic production companies, which obviously makes a big difference, but in general, it was just about being really sensible on the one hand, and then also creative about how you practically approach it. So, you know, don't have too many people on the set. It sounds like a really stupid, simple thing, but it makes a big difference. Mm. So I haven't actually gone on the shoots, and I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, really, because Ben's had to do all the client management and the creative direction. But yeah, just being really sensible, and like bringing your own coffee cups and bringing your own water bottles. They're actually very simple things that you can do that make the shoot work just fine, run absolutely fine. And then you obviously just need to be smart about the creative that you're writing. So yeah, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how long we're in this period in terms of where we can take our creative.
That's a really good point. You do have to, if we are making stuff, the idea has to take into consideration
be
how
COVID
it's going to be
friendly.
Made. It really does, yeah, totally. And so that is a restriction, but whilst we come out of this, it just has to be considered, because I suppose one of the shoots that we did was like, it was designed when we first originally did it, one of those things you go, well, we'll just have to see how it goes on the day. That makes a COVID friendly shoot particularly challenging, because you're kind of having to be sort of to think on your feet.
It's that agility thing again, even I know in the old days every little last bit of the shoot would be planned, you'd do traces and all kinds of stuff shots.
No, not this
and
one.
You're saying now you need to think on your feet as well, because there's going to be challenges there that we perhaps didn't expect.
Yeah exactly. But it does, you just got to make sure the idea is strong enough and that it doesn't require it cannot require too much looseness. It has to, it needs to be as tight as possible, actually.
And have a contingency plan. That's a really boring thing to say as well, but imagine if your model turns up and their temperature's high and they can't come on the shoot, you need a backup plan.
I don't want to go there. Look, we're kind of running out of time, but before we go, there was a lot of talk at the beginning of lockdown about great innovations, you know, how all the kind of alcohol manufacturers were making hand sanitizer. Mm. And the car companies were going to be making ventilators. Yeah, you remember what happened to those stories, okay? Okay, the hand sanitizer did happen, but the ventilators, what happened to them? They never happened, did they?
No.
Never heard of them. You know,
Mr. Dyson's ventilator, fail. Bless him. That didn't work. So were there any real innovations then throughout this whole process? I think my shopping experience online has got better. But any others you can think of?
I mean, it's a sign that we've struggled. Completely. Yeah. Certainly for innovation. I was just, whilst listening to you guys, pushing myself there to think, come on, there must be an obvious example, and I'm sure there is. But I think the main success is those that have adapted. And again, it's quite an obvious statement, but if you go to any, if you've been to a pub, it's still a varying degree of who's adapted the best to make people feel kind of more comfortable. I think creatively, it's been quite interesting. You know, we've talked about somewhat over the podcast last few months, the people that have adapted to not just talk about themselves, but talk about the environment, and even the likes of Amazon, and talk about how their staff are changing. So the evolvement of creativity has been quite interesting. And to Ben's point, I'm grateful we've now moved beyond kind of UGC homogeny, and have now got some great work. I'll mention the AA, their recent stuff's been fantastic. So struggling to feel like...
I've got two for you very quickly. One is, I alluded to it earlier, Karen, my doctor. Yeah. I mean, wow.
NHS, now, like, some, you know, GP stuff has been phenomenal, actually.
Zoomy kind of consultations with your doctor, easy to get them, phone calls. That's got speeded up. That's worked
really
quite well.
Has,
do you know what? Eating out and drinking out, where they've got the little barcode thing, and you kind of log in, and then the menu comes up on your phone, and you order from your phone. I was down on the South Bank at the weekend, and that's what they're doing there. It's pretty quick as well. No more queuing. I used to hate queuing at a bar. Now I just scan the barcode, and somebody comes with a drink. Amazing.
I have to say that you're right. Comeback of the year is the QR code. Often despised and misused by brands and businesses for years. Now,
it's because you needed a QR code reader. Now it's just your camera.
That is a huge shift. And that's actually been the most, I think that's the best innovation. All the brand stuff felt incredibly PR driven and quite cynical. And I kind of felt a lot of it, including the hand sanitizer. I won't mention the brand. I found it just a bit sort of like, that was disaster capitalism for me. I didn't like it at all. I think the one they did it, the best of ones that did it, LVMH in Paris, didn't make a big song and dance about it, did repurposed, re-simple bottles of like one of their perfumes, but like filled it with sanitizer, and it wasn't a big sort of PR stunt. It was like, they were actually doing it on the production line rather than some overly designed and badly thought out sort of like, you know, big brand exercise. I just thought that was a bit naff.
I think the creative for me that's come out best is actually the creative that hasn't been earnest or fostering a sense of spirit. It's been the advertising that's been funny. And I know there was a lot of, we spoke a lot about when is humor appropriate when everyone's in a panic. But certainly in the later weeks, as things have settled down, where brands have made light of the situation in a way that is culturally on the nose, that is the advertising I think has stood out and has been best. But I really, really struggled to think of something that an innovation or a business that had adapted so well that it really made me take notice. But then I think I might have just stayed at home a bit too much.
slightly more sheltered. One thing just sprung to mind, was so charming, was a cafe in Paris that to create social distancing and all their seating, they bought like life-size teddy bears.
And sat them in.
And it's been picked up now. I think a lot of the baseball stadiums in America are copying it, but I think it was a cafe in Paris, and it was just, not only did it look super cute and charming, but it was a brilliant kind of brilliant sign of creativity to adapt to the challenge. Yeah, I mean, we talked about kind of e-commerce and shopping. I've certainly seen a huge growth in the likes of Clearpay and Klarna showing up where I'd never seen it before, which I think it's just kind of, they obviously have their critics, but I think it's important for people now to think that they can still purchase with a bit more security over kind of payment and stuff like that. But obviously e-commerce is a huge shift.
So looking back, the acceleration wasn't as great as I thought it was going to be.
No.
Maybe there is something still emerging that, you know, so we haven't seen the full extent of it. So I don't know about you guys. I am optimistic. I'm looking forward to Christmas. I hope that our retail friends have a good Christmas, and that, was it £14 billion we didn't spend during the time we were meant to? I'm sure that's the figure I've got in my head. That's the spending that's been held back that we're hoping will come back at Christmas.
Fingers
fingers crossed.
Christmas present.
Yes. I'll tell you what, actually, with the sort of the Black Friday period not far away, yeah, and the growth of e-commerce, that would be an interesting period to see how bombastic that goes. Yeah.
Well, look, it's great to have everybody back. This is our first day. We're not entirely sure how we're going to do it next, are we?
No.
We're just going to go with the flow. That's exactly what we're going to do.
Maybe come back another day and try again.
Yeah.
I love this new pool, by the way. I'm going to see how far we can push it. This new go with the flow philosophy.
Yeah.
Take that as you will. Yeah.
So I'll see you again soon, I guess.
You will.
Yeah. Take care, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.